It's been way too long for our next guest, and we're so glad to have him on. I was talking to him right before we came on. He says he's gotten more interviews in the last 2 weeks than he's gotten in the last year. Well, that's because the moon landing anniversary is coming up, and his new film, American Moon, will focus on that. Massimo Mazzucco is who we're talking about. He's an award-winning Italian filmmaker. He's turned to documentaries when he began to awake to really what's going on. He's known for producing these films, such as The New American Century, Cancer, The Forbidden Cures. He's done one about the true history of marijuana, the second Dallas who killed RFK, September 11th, and his new one, as we mentioned, The American Moon, we'll discuss in detail. Massimo Mazzucco, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Very nice to be back. Thank you very much.
Well, obviously, we're 3 days away from the anniversary of the quote-unquote moon landing, whatever that was, and we have this film. Why this film right now?
Well, it's actually been ready for since a year now, but I was waiting for this date, of course, because it's the 50th anniversary. In fact, you have no idea what is happening right here, because I am Italian. I'm more known here in Italy than in the States, of course. And here, there was a couple of major magazines who wrote articles about it, and it just opened up a whole can of worms. It's been a discussion on the national newspapers all over, just because I dare to touch something that seems to be apparently untouchable, like the truth about the moon landings. And you know me. I don't have any preconceived ideas. I analyze facts, and I draw my conclusions only after the facts. But apparently this idea that you're touching this icon, which is, I mean, I understand it. It's you know, it's the pinnacle. Our entire society is based on science, and the moon landings are the pinnacle of the science philosophy. So, of course, when you touch something like that, you get this kind of reactions. But yes. I think that we should be – go ahead, sorry.
No, what made you want to do this to begin with? Is it because you had heard things? Because, like you said, this is such a sacred cow? I mean, what was the motivation to begin with?
I am – you can call me with very serious quotes and unquotes. You can call me a conspiracy theorist. But in this case, it was not born out of that. It was born out of my background as a professional photographer. In other words, when I was young, I was 15 actually on the day that the supposed moon landing took place, so on July 20, 1969, I was turning 15 that day. Not only that, the first time in my life I kissed a girl on that night. Yeah. So to me, that was a unique date in my own personal calendar that I was never going to forget. The problem is that I became a professional photographer later on, and of course I never looked at the pictures again. But then again, around the year 2000, 2001, when the internet came about and when NASA started to put out all these pictures in high definition, the moon pictures, the Apollo pictures in high definition, I looked at them and I saw in those pictures exactly the same shortcomings that I was experiencing when I was trying to replicate the sunlight in a studio, which is known to be impossible. The sun is such a huge source of light that there is no way to replicate. You can fake it. You can make it look like the sun in the studio. But to the trained eye, you will know that is not the sun. And I saw these problems in those pictures. So I started looking at them more carefully, and they looked exactly like, you know, when I was trying to do a model with a bathing suit sitting on a little, standing on a little sandbox with a back projection of the Bahamas sea in the background, I would get exactly those exact problems that I saw in the moon pictures. So the first thing I did was I called up one of the photographers, the photographer I learned the trade from. His name is Oliviero Toscani. He's very famous around the world. He's the one who made the old Benetton campaigns, among others. So I called him up, and we were still friends, and I said, Oliviero, what did you think when you saw the moon pictures, the NASA pictures for the first time? And he told me, and I quote him literally, he said, had they asked me to do them, I would have done a much better job.
so that probably stuck with you for quite a while, obviously.
This guy's not a conspiracy theorist. He's even today is confounded by the fact that we didn't go to the moon, probably. But, you know, he was certainly convinced that we did, but he knew the pictures were wrong as from a professional point of view. So what I decided to do is, well, given my background as a photographer and given the fact that I still know many of the photographers who were already active in the 70s, when the NASA missions took place, the Apollo missions took place, I interviewed them. I went to interview, for example, I mean, I'm sure you guys in America know who Peter Lindbergh is. He's the most famous living photographer right now. He's the guy who invented all the so-called supermodels, Cindy Crawford, Nina Evangelista.
Yes, yes.
And for example, they all came from his lens. This is the guy. So I managed to get an interview with him and others, Toscani himself and a couple of others. And they all tell me the same things when they look at the pictures. They say, look, I don't know whether we went to the moon or not, but these pictures are taken in the studio. This is studio light. This is not the sun. It's obvious. And it's so obvious that they start laughing. I mean, I was embarrassed to edit my film because at some point Lindbergh begins laughing when he sees this. He says, oh, my God, how many suns are there on the moon? Because I can see two suns here, two different sources. So that's when I knew that I was onto something serious. Then after the photography, I started analyzing also all the other issues that are comprised in the moon landing discussion, so to speak. And I found other things that, in my opinion, also denounce it was faked. Now, there's one thing I'd like to say, though, about the idea of faking the moon landings, because this is a perception that is very wrong all around the world. Everybody thinks of the moon hoax, the possible moon hoax, as an idea that NASA had from the beginning. They said, okay, let's just fool everybody, let's just fool the Russians, let's just fake this, and ha ha ha. I don't think at all it happened like that. What I think it happened is that they really tried very hard until 1967 at least, or 68, they did. It was only then, a year and a half away from the deadline that Kennedy has set, that they realized that not only were they going to make it, but the problems were getting bigger and bigger. And at that point, they already had all the simulators in place that could replicate or duplicate an entire trip to the moon, including the moon landings. If you look at the images from the simulators of the landings and the actual, what is supposed to be the actual landing of the lamb on the moon, they're practically identical. That means that either they were so good in predicting the light conditions and everything that they would find in the moon that their simulators gave out perfect images, or they used the simulator images. And I think that this is what happened, basically. They got to a point where they could no longer say, oops, I'm sorry, we're not going to make it. There's too many problems. You know, at that point in 68, everybody was ready to go to the moon. People were just waiting for this to happen. The propaganda had been relentless. So I put myself in the shoes of the NASA people and the government at the time. There's no way you can tell the American people that you're not going to make it. You can't tell the world that. You're going to look like a stupid thing. So they basically took their chances, and they faked it. That's what I think it happened.
So as you started to research this, let's obviously it began to be clearer to you. What was the big obstacles that you think prevented this? And is it possible that they just used this footage? Maybe they lost the real footage. I mean, is there any possibility in your mind that they really went to the moon?
Let me put it this way. To be extremely honest, I cannot say I believe that, but I cannot state 100% sure that we never went to the moon, at least with the Apollo missions. But I can state 101% sure that every single image from Apollo 11 to Apollo 17 of the so-called moon landings is fake, and it was taken on Earth. That I know as a fact. So somebody has to explain from NASA at least why, if they really went, they had to fake all those pictures and why they never told us. So that's where I stand. I mean, I cannot make
right.
an absolute
I understand.
Statement, but I want an answer on the pictures at least. That I think it's legitimate to ask.
In your research, did you find out what was that big obstacle? As 1967, as they started getting close, they realized, you know, we're not going to be able to do this. What was the big obstacle they couldn't overcome?
I don't think there was one single obstacle. I think the whole enterprise was extremely, extremely adventurous, so to speak. It was extremely almost impossible from the beginning. But when you have 6, 7, 8 years to go, you think you can solve all the problems. So once you get closer and closer, and not only the time is running, you're running out of time, but your problems start to multiply. That's when you realize that, oh, my God, we're never going to be able. So I don't think it was a single problem. Just think of this, for example. We get to the beginning of 1967 with not even a single Apollo capsule having been launched in space. They had the big accident where three astronauts died, burned alive in a launch test on the ground.
What year was that? Was it 1967? Yes, 67. Okay.
January 67, and that was Grissom, Chaffee, and White. They burned alive, basically, in a capsule. After the accident, they gave the commission to another astronaut, Frank Borman. The conclusion was that the entire capsule, so that the command module, needed to be redesigned from scratch. Now, you already have a situation when everybody's running around like chicken with no head, you know, not knowing what to do and what is missing, and suddenly you have this big thing drop on you that says you need one more year, and that's what it took, one more year just to redesign the entire capsule, the lunar, the command module, the capsule in which the three astronauts travel all the way close to the moon. Then two of them get into the LM and get on the surface. But the big travel is done in the main capsule. That needed to be redesigned from scratch. So that added one extra year. When you only have a year and a half left to go, 2 years and a half left to go, and you lose one whole year just to redesign the capsule, I understand that that can be problematic. I mean, we're not talking about a little problem. Somebody needs to go and get a little screw because we're missing a screw here and there. A total redesign at that point was, to me, the moment where there's even an interview, which I show in the film, by Gene Kranz, the Houston Space Center director, who says, after the fire, we would have not continued. But we realized that we had to go on, because otherwise we would have looked like, I don't know what words he uses, gooks or something like that. We would have looked stupid in front of the entire world. So he himself, the director of the Houston Space Center, says that. We didn't want to continue, but we realized we had to. Now, whether they could solve all those problems in a year and a half only or not, you know, it's a decision that history will have to make.
We can't even get the government to pave the road in a year. Much less build a capsule to go to the moon.
Another good argument is that if it was so easy to go, because they make it look very easy, everything after 67, after the fire, everything went so well that they were even skipping missions. They were, okay, let's not do this test. Let's just go straight to the space. For example, with Apollo 8. Apollo 8 wasn't supposed to take the LEM and go around the moon. But they said, well, you know what? Let's go. So, I mean, it was like everything went so well from that moment on. And today, 50 years later, the so-called, quote-unquote, return to the moon, it's taking forever. First, we were supposed to go back under Bush. I remember 2004, we're going back to the moon. That never happened. It was pushed back to 2012. In 2012, we heard, oh, no, not ready yet, 2016. Now, 2016 became 2019. Now we're talking 2024. So, wait a minute. What happened to the technology that we supposedly had 50 years ago that made it so easy? Why does it have to be so complicated now that we cannot do it now? And you know, Trump, go ahead, sorry.
No, I think that, don't apologize, Massimo. I think that that's the biggest question to me is why don't we have a base there? Why don't we send in stuff up there all the time? Why isn't there some space station around there? Why? I mean, it seems just elementary.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Humankind is made to pioneer and to conquer everywhere. I mean, the pioneers didn't come to, the settlers didn't come to America just to sit on the coast of the west coast of
right.
Oh, sorry, the east coast of the States and sit there and fish. They conquered the entire country and they made it their own. Whenever Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic for the first time, it wasn't just a one only event or standalone operation. After that, we developed commercial flights and we have now flights going back and forth every 10 minutes. So you would expect after that breakthrough of going to the moon, that yes, we would have bases now that would allow us to reach out to further planets.
A hotel. You think by now we'd have a hotel there. You could go stay on a vacation there.
a Holiday Inn on the Moon. That would be
yeah. I mean, really.
Of course, because golf was also played on the moon, supposedly, yes.
Okay, let's talk about the timeline. I mean, this is such a big subject. You kind of help steer where you think we should go, but let's start 67, the accident in the beginning of 67. So they got, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, whatever, to make this happen. Let's talk about that timeline and what you saw or yeah. something that stood out to you.
Actually, it's exactly what happened right after the accident that really struck my mind because, for example, NASA Administrator James Webb, he came in charge in, I think, 61. He was actually the one who proposed and pushed the project with Kennedy. I found recordings, live recordings, historical recordings from the library as a conversation between James Webb and Kennedy in 1963, which completely reverses the idea that we have that Kennedy wanted to go to the moon. In the conversation, you can hear Kennedy asking Webb, do we really want to do this? Can we really make this? Do we have to risk the lives of the astronauts? Do we need to spend all that money when we can send unmanned probes to the moon and find exactly what we want to find out anyway? And James Webb, in the conversation, which you can hear in the film, says, no. We have built these big boosters because they're designed exactly for this, to take men up there, so we have to take them because that's a project, that's the idea. And still Kennedy's unconvinced, but Webb is pushing for this. And then Webb was the one who went to Congress and, you know, to get the appropriation for the necessary money for the project. I mean, he was the cheerleader, so to use a funny word, for the project. And this is what struck with me. In 1968, James Webb, oh, no, sorry, 67, or either 67 or 68, I don't remember. James Webb resigned from NASA with no apparent explanation.
Hmm.
I mean, here's the man who has pushed the entire space yeah. program, the Moon Project, with Kennedy. Kennedy's already dead by 68. We have Johnson now. But Webb, the person who actually pushed the project, is saying he's retiring. And he actually went in front of the Space Commission in 67, yes. And he said, and I'm quoting him almost literally, he said, if we're going to make it by 69, it's going to be extremely extreme. We're going to be very, very, very lucky, he says. And we were already going to be lucky if we had made it. I said this last year already, and now it's even worse. So what he's saying basically is the more the time goes by, the more the problems become bigger because they were actually getting closer. You know, one thing is to say, yeah, let's go to the moon, and one thing is to do it. And when you get, you know, hands on, and you have to find the solutions for all the problems that come up, then he resigns. The same, the deputy director of NASA also resigns at the same time, basically, without an apparent explanation. There's an interview from the Washington Post. They say to him, Mr. Simmons, that was his name, why are you quitting now? We're so close to getting to the moon. And his answer was, well, you know, I was planning to be here only 2 years. I've been already 7 years. I'm going home. That's not an answer from a deputy director of NASA who is just about to fulfill
yes.
the dream of your life, you know? And even worse, an astronaut, Wally Schirra, he also resigned right after Webb, 4 or 5 days after. With no apparent explanation. So why did all these people resign in 67, 68?
Why do you
after
think?
After the accident.
What, if you had to speculate.
Why do I think? Because they didn't want to, they knew they were hearing, my opinion, this is, I cannot prove this. My opinion is that they were hearing rumors about possibly faking it and they didn't want to have anything to do with it. I think these were honest people who actually believed that we could make it and they're not going to go for, you know, being part of the faking. Of the hoax, so they chose to go home.
Let me go backwards before I think that's a very important point. We're gonna hit that hard. Let's go backwards first. From my research, what I can tell, it was about 1960, 61 when I don't know if it was Russia or America. I think Russia discovered the Van Allen Belt, or 50, maybe it was 59. We realized there was the Van Allen Belt. Where does that come in this whole discussion?
Okay. Van Allen was an American scientist who discovered the belts in the end of 57, beginning of 58.
Okay,
he
58.
He sent out an Explorer 1 rocket to explore the outer space, the outer orbit, and the Geiger counter came back crazy, came back with, you know, off the charts. And so they knew, and they started to realize that there was intense radiation surrounding the Earth. So basically, Van Allen wrote a few papers in 1959, 1960, saying this radiation area will be definitely represent a big problem for astronauts. We have to steer clear of those belts. He wouldn't call them belts yet because they were named after him, but later. So, you know, we will have to steer clear. It's been a long time. I haven't spoken English. I get a little.
You're doing very good, Massimo. Okay. You're doing very good. Don't even worry. You sound great.
So basically said, you know, before we go through, we send people to the region of space, we have to figure out the protection for them, which is not even feasible right now. It's not even thinkable. We have to come up with some idea that's not even close to becoming reality right now. Even Kennedy, in one of his speeches, says we're going to have to find total new solutions to put the astronauts through these belts, because you have to cross these belts to go to the moon, basically. So they're like a donut, you know, it's like a large donut around the Earth. They start at around, 5,000 kilometers would be about 1,500 miles, more or less, and they go up to until 2,500 miles, more or less. So it's a thick area, which you can cross quickly, but even quickly, you know, it's like going through the rain quickly. You're not going to get wet. You still get wet.
Yeah.
Even if you run under the rain, if the rain is thick, you get wet. Right? So basically he said, you know, we have to find protection. Then something absolutely incredible happened. In 1968, you stop hearing about the belts. They're no longer a problem. The astronauts go, they sent astronauts out there, Apollo 8, without even sending a monkey first. They just send them through these belts with no prior testing of any kind. They don't even mention the crossing of the belts in the entire mission. They come back and they say, oh, everything is okay, no problem. It was like an X-ray. Basically, NASA's position is, we found out that it was just like an X-ray, a chest X-ray, basically. So no problem. Okay, so we say, okay, maybe, you know, Van Allen was wrong. No, it's better this way, so it's not a problem. But now what happens? Now that we want to go back again, or go for the first time again, now the Van Allen belts have become again a problem. There's a video from a NASA astronaut called, I think his name is Kelly Smith, who actually explains that we want to go to the moon with the new mission Orion, but to get there we have to cross the Van Allen belts, which are, and I quote him, a very dangerous area for man. He says, we have to solve these challenges. This is, I'm quoting him literally right now. We have to solve these challenges before we send people through that region of space. So I go, what happened here? Wait a minute. We had these problems, and they were deemed to be deadly up until 68. From 68 to 72, they're just an X-ray, and now the problem again?
It's climate change. It's global warming, also.
Exactly. So, but it's either or. You can't have them both. So I'm ready to accept that it was only an X-ray, like NASA says. But then you don't tell me that you have a problem now. It's either or. You can't have both. So this the problem with the Van Allen belts is it cannot be proven in definitively in one way or the other, because we don't know the exact amount of radiation. But we do have this contradiction, which is really blatant, and somebody needs to explain that.
Were you able to get any Russian information? I know we've had scientists on here who had contact with Russians, and I don't know if this was public or whatever, but they've told him that they sent people up there and they were fried to death like in a microwave. They knew darn well they couldn't pass those belts. I don't know if you got any information out of Russia.
No, I don't know any. I don't know anything. Aside from what is officially known. I never heard of that. I don't think they send them far enough to fry. I mean, they killed enough of their own by sending them in orbit before Gagarin. That I know. That's pretty much a known fact right now. I never knew of astronauts actually being sent through the belts without people knowing. But it's possible they did. I mean, these Russians would certainly do it.
Oh, yes, no question. I mean, they were doing a lot of things that wasn't public, for sure. Yeah. There's the music. We got a break with Massimo Mizuko. The movie is American Moon. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on demand on Vimeo. This is a very important work, And as you can hear, his passion is just, it's contagious. This is very neat. Stay tuned. ThePowerHour.com. More with Massimo.